You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM in Minneapolis and around the world at kfai.org. The community's true voice.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them, and not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
To be a language teacher, you have to love children. You have to love the language, you know, loving our community enough to see that the impacts that this language teaching will have on our healing and recovery process as community members.
Bonjour, hello, welcome to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. I'm your host, Leah Lem.
And I'm your other host, Co Primo. Mi gwaich for joining us today. Native Lights is, at its core, a place for Native folks to tell their stories. And every week, we have wonderful conversations with great guests from a whole lot of different backgrounds and just a wonderful mixture of passions. And we talk to them about their gifts and how they share those gifts with their community and centering around, you know, finding purpose in our lives and amplifying Native voices. Mm-hmm. A lot of stuff to cover. And we're back at it again. How you doing, Leah?
Pretty good. Yeah. Just hanging in there, trying to ignore any cold symptoms I might have. But that's it. That's the way this time of year is. How about you, Cole?
Doing great. It's as we record this, there's like an impending winter storm. So just a lot of work going around that in my day job because, you know, mm-hmm. You got to keep people informed on that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you keeping up on shows?
I was going to say, on our Native Lights show, we like to bring in some pop culture references, especially when there's a Native angle to it, of course. And The Last of Us, the most recent episode that we've seen, had a couple familiar faces. Graham Greene of Dances with Wolves fame and Elaine Miles. People may know her from the TV show Northern Exposure or the person driving the car in reverse in the movie Smoke Signals.
Yep.
So that was great to see. And I sent a little clip out and I know you had a funny take about that show. So I just wanted to mention that.
Well, it was just so funny because they're on. So The Last of Us, you know, end of the world's. There's not a virus, but a fungus in taking over people's bodies, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And the main protagonists, Joel and Ellie, run into Graham Greene's character and Eileen Miles' characters in just a cabin in the woods. I looked at that mm-hmm. and I was like, hey, that's our dad living out there. And then, of course, they're like, don't go west of the river. Whatever you do, the Indians being all, there's danger past there. And I'm like, let me guess what they're going to do.
Immediately cutscenes.
And then what do they do? But it's to be seen whether it's, you know, positive, negative, et cetera.
Before watching that cool episode with the couple of Native guests, I had the wonderful opportunity to jam with my nephew, Marvin, when we were at a little family dinner on Sunday. Mm-hmm. And that was really great. We it may have been our first, like, official jam session, so that was pretty wonderful. We played the theme to Last of the Mohicans, of course, because why not?
It's very on-brand.
Yeah, no, with the bass going, with the
Yep, Marvin was on bass, you were on guitar. You were telling him what notes to play.
Yeah, the vibes were great.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought it was a good thing to mention because it relates to our episode. You know, Marvin obviously has talent, skill, a natural ability with that. But there's also, you know, people around him who have nurtured that talent, including you and Dan, of course. But, you know, also his teachers have aided in his development. Mm-hmm. And so that definitely relates to our episode today concerning early child care education. It may be a bit younger than Marvin's age, what we're talking about now. But nonetheless, you know, children are the future. Teachers are an integral part of, you know, this, of society and providing education for the next generation. We are talking to Jewel Akorin. Jewel is a Assistant Wahpeton Nation citizen, a community activist, and the executive director for Wichoye Nundakukainden, a language immersion preschool located in Minneapolis. There, she pursues her commitments to early childhood education and language revitalization. She also does work addressing intergenerational historical trauma. And so we'll definitely talk about the school, but also hope to hear about all her other passions and more about her story. And here she is, Buju.
Hello, my relatives. I greet you all with a handshake from my heart. I am Sisitwan Dakota in Sichangu, Rosebud, Lakota. So, but I grew up here in the Minneapolis area, South Minneapolis. You know, I went to Phillips, Seward, and South High. So have grown up here in the Minneapolis area. And a large part of my work, my career, has been in the Native nonprofit sector. So giving back to the community is pretty important to me.
So how are you doing? How's your family doing?
Well, I have a large family. We come from a family of nine plus my mom and dad. So we had 11 of us. And then we all grew up here. Most of us, a couple of us were born out of Montana, South Dakota. But most of us were born here in the cities. I have three children, adult children, and then I have several grandchildren. So I'm a grandmother. I'm a great grandmother. And, you know, I think in terms of family, my family has experienced a lot of the trauma, addiction, some of those painful topics that have hit a lot of our families and a lot of our Native families. I'm raising grandkids, so I'm on my second round of kids from age 6 to right now, almost 17. And so we have our ups and downs, you know, we continue to pray for a healing and recovery. And I think I'm not raising my grandkids in the cities. I now live in the suburbs and I commute to work. So I think there's an energy that's in the Minneapolis area that's like a vortex, I call it. And it's real hard to not get kind of sucked dipped into that vortex of that involves using in some harmful, risky behaviors, for sure.
Thanks for sharing that, Jewel. What is on the top of your mind today? Is there something that's important to you that you'd like to get started with, start chatting about?
Well, you know, as you asked about my family, I think one of the, and with the health background in behavioral health, I have a master's in behavioral health, and I've really kind of segued that into how does our community recover from the genocide that happened here in the Americas. And that is a topic that is not often acknowledged, I believe, or it's rarely discussed in terms of those that umbrella and all of those kind of social economic factors that trickle down from that genocide that's happened here. And so as we talk about the program I work for, Wichoye Nundakukainden, how language revitalization is a pathway to recovery. We've seen that happen with many of our families where the kids bring this language home. We all know, or many of us are aware of how language was disrupted in our communities through the boarding schools, kind of that forced relinquishing of our language and that forced learning of the English and what those kind of subsequent consequences that happened in our family dynamics. And so language then becomes a pathway to recovery for our community. And so recovery is something I'm passionate about. Having been impacted, my parents were boarding school parents. So they were taken at five. Both my parents were taken at five. My father was able to hang on to his language. And in spite of the challenges that happened in those abusive behavior that happened in those boarding schools. And my mother never spoke Dakota again. She understood it, but she just went answer back in Dakota. And then you kind of talk about those shame and the fear and some of those other factors that go in with the loss of language, and how do we begin to recover that language. Both of our Dakota and Ojibwe languages are, with the Dakota being critically endangered and the Ojibwe language not being far. I've worked in language for a long time now. Since this program first started with Dakota Ojibwe Language Revitalization Association, they did a lot of foundational work at the legislative level. And they introduced a bill with our language champion, Karen Clark, that Minnesota supports language revitalization. And they opened their classrooms in 2006. We've been here ever since then. And the reason I say is that we're here as a nonprofit is because language continues to be very important to our community. And people want their child to know their ancestor or their tribal language. So that is one of the reasons we still exist. I also believe that families understand somehow that it is a pathway to recovery. And we've seen this happen with some of our families. We're introducing traditional foods to families. We're introducing songs and, language. And the kids kind of open that door again for families that maybe either put it on a shelf, forgot about it, and they bring that language home. And the amount of joy that we see in our elders, our community, that positive reinforcement when our kids are singing their songs, when they're coming and greeting each other, little tiny ones, 18 months, speaking the language. The amount of joy that brings to some of our elders and our family members in the community kind of really reinforces that this is what we need to be doing, starting at this early childhood level to recover that loss of language. It's a way to help save our languages for sure. Mm-hmm.
I think that's really great. And as we continue to talk more about the school, maybe you could tell us what Wichoye Nandagikenden means.
Well, Wichoye is learning words in Dakota, and Nandagikenden, I think it means place or space, like a place to learn words, place, space, as I understood. Nandagikenden being Ojibwe and Wichoye being Dakota. So a place to learn words, place to, was the name that the founding mothers, kind of arrived at that point. All of our founding mothers were in early childhood education. And they had did a lot of, foundational work in terms of research, gathering elders. And back in pre-2006, and maybe even a little after, there were so many elders that would come to these gatherings, and they went to every single reservation. And I was able to be included in some of those trips to those reservations, but to hear the amount of pain some of the elders felt so bad that they either couldn't speak their language or they weren't able to pass their language on were some of the thoughts that came out of those language gatherings. Lots of tears and pain in those first initial gatherings, and how far we've come and how far and how much we've lost too, because we've lost so many of our elders. We used to be able to bring elders together and just get them together and speak. And there's here in the Twin Cities, I think, so again, just something to be aware of for those of us. And I think most of us are who work in language that are aware that, our languages continue to be in critical condition. So,
yeah, and I think it's so lovely that it's a combination of Dakota and Ojibwe.
I think the narrative that has been pushed through the education system that we were tribal nations that really were at war with each other. And we know as the Ojibwe folks were migrating down, the trade wars that happened and the Dakota folks that were living in that particular area, and the narrative that we had to have the government come in and settle these wars between us. But in fact, we know if you look at the bigger picture, the treaty negotiators, the industry folks, and the folks in government were kind of all it would be considered insider trading nowadays, but they were all kind of collaborating because really what they wanted was the land up north. They wanted the timber, they wanted the water, they wanted the mining. And so as Dakota and Ojibwe people, we kind of got caught in that, and not with all of the genocide happening and all these policies coming down and bounties on our heads. You know, the fact that we've survived says a lot to our resiliency, our resistance, and our love for this place we call home, Minnesota.
You're listening to Native Lights, where Indigenous voices shine. Native Lights is produced by Minnesota Native News and Ampers with support from the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Today we're speaking with Jewel Arcorn, a Sisseton Wahpeton Nation citizen, community activist, and the executive director for Wichoye Nandag Gikendan, a language immersion preschool located in Minneapolis.
How did you become involved at the school? Can you talk about that and just your role at the school now?
I think I've always had an interest in language revitalization. I think when the women were first gathering back in the late 90s, I know Muriel likes to call it the women of the round oval table. They would gather at the neighborhood early learning center, Leila Gagalai, Vicky Chavez, Jennifer Ben Dixon, Cleon Thompson, Tammy Shaw. Are some of the women, Betty Jane Schaff and her mom, Betty Jane, they're all women who were like in early childhood. And so they had to ask, I think just my experience working in nonprofit and community gathering and organizing, they had asked me to come and participate. And it wasn't really until 2013 when I was in between jobs that I was asked to be on the board of this program. And I said yes, because I'd always been involved in some capacity, either helping out with their, you know, gatherings or being able to travel with them. And so that is really, in 2013, I came and was initially served on their board, but there was so much work on the administrative side. They were kind of in between directors. And so I said, yeah, I'd help out.
Earlier, you mentioned food. Could you talk about, you know, the work with food sovereignty at school and just, you know, healthy foods? And
absolutely, gosh. I think that it's always been a dream for the founding mothers to get their own space. Wichoye doesn't have our own space. Right now we're housed in another program, but we're moving into the direction that Wichoye is going to get their own dedicated language immersion space, long overdue. So we're finally moving in and get all our stakeholders and all the folks involved in that. Part of that dream or part of that vision was to always be able to serve our own foods into the program. So breakfast, lunch, and snack. And we got a grant from the Minnesota Department of Health to kind of really focus on food sovereignty. So we've been able to, you know, begin to serve our kids. And I think we're always moving in that direction so that we can serve our kids like the what's on the menu sometimes is the bison wild rice meatballs or the turkey wild rice meatballs, or we'll have wild rice and blueberries and maple syrup for breakfast. We'll serve them with the nuts and the berries and sweet potatoes and squash, you know, so really kind of introducing our kids at a very young age, hopefully before they get introduced to some of our Western snacks, you know, the potato chips and the pop and all those high kind of carbs that are kind of detrimental to our health in the long run. And I think part of this initiative is to really not only introduce our children, our babies in the program, but to begin to find food influencers. Each family has a food influencer. It's like, you know, why whole family will get diabetes because we're all eating at the same table. We're all eating the same food. Well, if we begin to shift that food back to our own traditional foods, there's a correlation to healthier lifestyle outcomes. So it's kind of looking at that food initiative. We've always had some garden space where the kids kind of come in, they'll do planting, they'll do harvesting. We hope, you know, we've tried to teach them some of the planting and harvesting songs in the early childhood by way of language revitalization. And so that whole garden piece in, is part of our curriculum. When we get our own space, we'll have an outdoor learning environment so that they can, hopefully we'll have our own garden space that will feed our commercial kitchen that we have. That's part of the dream. So that we will be cooking breakfast, lunch, and snack. And then we can bring families in to learn how to cook. Some of our families, because the system has disconnected us from our traditional life ways, we don't know how to harvest, or maybe we don't know how to cook some of our foods. And so we'd be, the dream or the vision then is to be really introducing all of our families so that we can all have access to this food. We know that our traditional food sometimes is cost prohibitive. So really finding pathways that we can build these kind of course consortiums or collectives where we can all have access to the buffalo, that we can get access to our, I just had some great venison and elk and moose jerky. And it was absolutely wonderful. You know, you know when your DNA is being fed, right? It doesn't mean you don't get tired. You actually get energized. And that should always be an indicator for the foods we're eating. If it feeds your DNA, your makeup, you should have energy instead of, you know, when we eat a meal and get tired. So those are kind of indicators that sometimes we forget about. But the goal then is within this food sovereignty initiative, and I think a lot of all over the whole nation is kind of looking at how do we return to our foods that was so healthy for us, because we didn't have diabetes and we didn't have these heart diseases and the cancer like we do now. And we know there's a correlation there. And how do we return to that point where we have access to our foods, just like we have access to our language? It's not cost prohibitive, right?
So it's really amazing all the different angles that the school is tackling. And I wanted to ask about the master apprentice model, because I know that, been developing these language teachers. Could you talk a little bit more about that?
Absolutely.